As this morning, I'd like to encourage you to open your Bibles and follow along so that at the end of this lesson, hopefully we've all been able to take something away from it. As you look around at the world in which we live, it's easy to see lots of problems. You look at the government, look at how much corruption there is in the government. There's an obvious moral decline among people, and there's an ever-prevalent disregard for the lives and possessions of others. You turn on the news, what do you hear? Someone murdered someone because they had something. They wanted to steal their car. They wanted to steal their jacket. We see a growing lack of respect in youth toward their parents and their elders. I've been to public school. You see some of them people, how they talk to the older people, how they talk about their parents, and it makes your stomach just turn. And as we see these things, we often say in despair, what can one person do? We just throw up our hands and conclude that we're helpless to affect any real change. In the book of Genesis, we're amazed at how God used various individuals to change the world. Perhaps the most famous of these figures in Genesis is a guy by the name of Noah. He was only one man, but God used that one man to save mankind. So this evening, I encourage you not to simply listen to the historical account of Noah. Listen also to learn what God can do through one person. And in order to understand what God did through Noah, we have to understand what Noah faced. We have to realize the state of the world that he was living in. We need to know what the problem was. Listen as the world was described at that time in Genesis chapter 6, verse 5. It says, "The Lord saw how great man's wickedness on the earth had become, and that every inclination of the thoughts of his heart was only evil all the time. The Lord was grieved that he had made man on earth, and his heart was filled with pain. So the Lord said, I will wipe mankind, whom I have created, from the face of the earth, men and animals and creatures that move along the ground and birds of the air, for I am grieved that I have made them." Those are pretty sobering words, aren't they? Every inclination of the thoughts of his heart was only evil all the time. It doesn't take much imagination to guess what was going on in everyday life. The people that day disregarded God. They may have talked about him in conversations, but he was absent from their lives. Religion had become an academic exercise. You know, we'd study God just to get a nice little basis, but we don't really want to follow anything that he says for us to do. Morality was something that was determined by personal choice rather than by God's standards. And I suggest to you that the days of Noah are not that different from our own. The flood wiped out all those wicked people. But you skip ahead only a few chapters later in Genesis and you read of the people of Babel and how they had reached a similar state of decadence. And Romans, Paul states, there is none righteous, none that do good, no one who seeks God. Things have not changed much. And if you don't believe me, I'll give you a little experiment to try. This week, as you watch television, notice how many times the commandments of God are scorned in a typical half-hour comedy or hour dramas. Look at the innuendo regarding illicit sexual relationships. Look at the deception. That's all soap opera is, isn't it? Talking about here's sleeping with this person over here and they're trying to deceive their husband over here. Look at the violence and the utter disregard for human life that's brought into our homes. Listen to the radio, talk or music, either or, and notice the values of the people involved. Notice that the standard for right and wrong appealed to is personal preference. You listen to those DJs. Some of them you want to have to cover your ears because of the things they'll say on the air, because they're going by what their personal preference is, not God's preference. Pay attention when people talk about God in our world. Their description of God is nothing like the God in the scriptures. Lots of famous people talk about their belief in God. You have them Oscars, those Academy Awards, always talk, oh, I'd like to thank God. But notice what this God they describe is like. Generally, the God they describe is concerned that we feel good. His only goal is to help us have a fulfilling life. He's only there to make us happy. There's no talk of his holiness. There's no talk about sin or judgment. The God of the world is a character created in the image of man. He's that painting just of the benevolent man with the beard with his shining light, and he's just there, just be happy. Watch a recent movie. You pay attention to the language, the morality, the ethics, and the behavior, and also notice the way God's people are often portrayed as lunatics. There was a time I saw this Law and Order on TV one day, and they had a so-called Christian person, and they made him out to be just the craziest. They had his hair all disorganized. He's all shaking and all, oh, God, and all this other thing. And just they just make a Christian look like a maniac. He's a fool for following what he does. And when you've done some of these things that I've just asked you to do, ask yourself a question. Why didn't I notice this before? Or why don't I find this repulsive? And the answer may startle you. It's because these things are mainstream. They're so integrated into our culture that they have just become the norm. And we have grown accustomed to it. In fact, we might have even embraced it. Chuck Swindoll wrote, "Because of sin, man has taken the deity out of religion, the supernatural out of Christianity, the authority from the Bible, God out of education, morality and virtue out of literature, beauty and truth out of art, ethics out of business, and fidelity out of marriage." Such is the nature of the world in which Noah lived, and such is the nature of the world in which we live. Next, I want to look at the character of Noah and how it contrasts with the world in which he was living. In Genesis chapter 6, verse 8 through 9, it says, "But Noah found favor in the eyes of the Lord." This is the account of Noah. "Noah was a righteous man, blameless among the people of his time, and he walked with God." And in the midst of this immoral society, one man stood out. A man by the name of Noah. And notice what we read about him. Noah found favor. In New International Version, we read that Noah found favor. In the Old King James Version, it says Noah found grace. Either way, it's important that we don't miss something here. Noah did not happen just to find God's blessing. He was given God's favor. Noah was not a perfect man. We have a tendency to see these Bible characters as superhuman kind of people. And so we can file them under the status of, that's not obtainable for me. That kind of faith, I can't obtain it. This man was extraordinary. We try and fool ourselves into that. Truth is, Noah was a common man who was willing to follow the Lord. I don't know when Noah was transformed by God's grace. He came from a family of faithful people, so he may have come to faith early. It really doesn't matter. What does matter is that Noah trusted God, and in doing so, Noah stood alone. Next, he was a righteous man. Noah was a man who did what God wanted him to do. In other words, he did what was right, thus the term righteous. He allowed God's standards to affect and direct his daily life. Noah was unafraid to live differently from the status quo. And that's something that's very hard today. I'll tell you, especially for younger people, you're in those circles of people who are always trying to pressure you. Do this, act like this, just behave this way. But you should know, as a Christian, you are not to live your life that way. You are supposed to be a peculiar creature. Next, he was a blameless man. In that godless society, no one had any charges against Noah. We can conclude that he had a good relationship with his friends and his neighbors. Now, they may have felt he was weird, but they respected him. No one wondered if Noah was dealing honestly with them when he made a trade. They didn't think, well, Noah's trying to rip me off. They knew his ethics were solid. No one questioned whether Noah was cheating on his wife. They knew he was committed to her. No one questioned Noah's methods. They knew he was not seeking to manipulate them when he acted lovingly. He acted lovingly because he was loving. No one questioned Noah's sincerity. They may have questioned his sanity, but not his heart. And this is the same experience believers may have today. In fact, God says we should select leaders who are of good reputation. Having a good reputation may not mean that you're invited to all the gatherings people have. But what it will mean is that when these folks have a need, they will turn to you. When they have a crisis, they will ask you to pray. They may not feel comfortable around you. That's one thing I learned from being a preacher. People hear I'm a preacher, it changes their attitude. They get uncomfortable real quick. They sit straight up, their eyes widen. They don't feel comfortable around me when they hear that, for the most part. And so is that they may not feel comfortable around you, but they will respect you. Also, Noah walked with God. He didn't just visit with God. He didn't stop in to see God on the Sabbath. He walked with him on a daily and hourly basis. Noah's relationship with God was not a temporary fascination. It wasn't something that came and went as Noah felt like it. It was enduring and steady. It was his relationship that was nurtured over hundreds of years. It was a steady, consistent relationship. Next, I want to look at God's plan. So in light of man's condition and Noah's faithfulness, God comes up with a plan. And that plan is to start over. God is going to bring a worldwide flood that will destroy every living thing. And his plan is to preserve humanity through Noah and his family. Let's listen to the text in Genesis chapter 6, verses 13 through 21. It says, God said to Noah, I'm going to put an end to all people, for the earth is filled with violence because of them. I am surely going to destroy both them and the earth. So make yourself an ark of cypress wood, make rooms in it, and coat it with pitch inside and out. This is how you are to build it. The ark is to be 450 feet long, 75 feet wide, and 45 feet high. Make a roof for it, and finish the ark within 18 inches of the top. Put a door on the side of the ark, and make lower, middle, and upper decks. I am going to bring floodwaters on the earth to destroy all life under the heavens, every creature that has breath of life in it. Everything on earth will perish, but I will establish my covenant with you, and you will enter the ark, you and your sons, and your wife and your sons' wives with you. You are to bring into the ark two of all living creatures, male and female, to keep them alive with you. Two of every kind of bird, of every kind of animal, and of every kind of creature that moves along the ground will come to you to be kept alive. You are to take every kind of food that is to be eaten and stored away as food for you and for them. Now, this story is so familiar that we may miss the magnitude of what's being asked of Noah right here. Noah was asked to build a vessel that was 4.5 stories high and as long as a football field and a half. Now, for those of you who've only seen a football field on TV, take it from someone who had to run them back and forth 4 times a day every week, every other day. It's a long distance. Someone has done the math and figured that the ark had a carrying capacity of 522 standard railroad stock cars, or the equivalent of 8 freight trains of 75 cars each. This wasn't a little recreational vehicle you took out onto the creek to go fishing. This was a major undertaking. To make matters worse, Noah and his family lived 500 miles or more away from the closest body of water. And believe it or not, it had never rained on the face of the earth before this. Mist came up from the ground to create the water. Can you imagine explaining the need of a boat and the concept of a flood under those conditions? So not only did God ask Noah to build this great vessel for which there was no precedent, he also had to do so in the midst of public ridicule. Certainly, others had to know him as Crazy Noah. I wouldn't be surprised if people made it their point to go past his house and point and laugh at the man who was building something that God told him to build. He was a freak to them. And certainly, maybe even his family wondered at times if Dad may have lost it. And even today, and you think, even today, with all our modern tools and resources, how difficult this would be to replicate this ark. This is a monumental undertaking. Building the ark would have cost Noah just countless amounts of money and led to unending torment by his neighbors and friends. The whole time he's doing it, they'd have to just be on him all the time. Noah, why are you doing this? Are you crazy? Why are you doing this thing? There's no God who's going to flood this world. But the whole time that these people are doing this to Noah, as he's making this ark, he's also preaching to the people. And how frustrating it must have been to have such an urgent message and get nothing but scorn and ridicule in response. He preached, but no one responded. That has to be one of the hardest things you can do, to have a message that you need to tell someone, but they refuse to listen to you. But Noah continued doing what God called him to do. He trusted God's word and God's promise, and that's what made him a man of faith. You want to look at applications. Think about what happened as a result of this one man. First, Noah was able to save his family. Second, Noah stood as a contrast to the world. He condemned the world by his faithfulness. He showed the justice of God's action. And lastly, Noah established himself for all time as a pattern of faith. We look at Noah. We have to admire Noah. He's a pattern of faith to us. See, this is not an old yarn about the good old days. God is still using people. He won't ask you to build an ark in your backyard, but he does still call people to be faithful. And to prove that faith, you may be asked to befriend and reach out to people that might taint your reputation. You may have to prove that by taking a risk financially in order to reach others. You may have to embark on something that no one has ever done before. Take a stand at your workplace. Care for someone who won't appreciate what you're doing. Show love even in a situation where the other person is the one who is in the wrong. You may have to leave that which is comfortable and go where he leads. You may have to make a difference. God can use you to do what you never dreamt possible. You may not be used in the worldwide setting, but he can use you. But we must remember some things. First, remember that God is not looking for perfection or even talented people. He is looking for willing hearts. God knows that we're sinners. There is no person on the earth who has not sinned. That's why he sent Christ. He's not looking for people who are overly self-confident. Like I said this morning, people who think, it's me, it's me, it's me. He doesn't want someone who believes in themselves. He wants someone who believes in him. Just because you failed in the past does not mean that God can't use you in the present. God can still work through you. It's not dependent on you. He is looking for someone who will dare to trust him as Noah did. Someone willing to simply do what he says. Someone who will take him at his word. Who will say, Lord, I'll follow you because you tell me to. Are you willing to do that? Are you willing to do things God's way rather than your own? Are you willing to trust his ability rather than your own schemes and devices? Are you willing to wait for him to work rather than to force the issue with your manipulative ploys? Are you willing to let God set the agenda? Are you willing to let God use you rather than you using God? Second, God is looking for long-term consistency rather than occasional experiences. God's not looking for hype and flash. He's looking for that which is solid and strong. God is looking for the person who will be steady and walk with him on a daily basis. He's not looking so much for people who will talk boldly, but people who will live consistently in his grace. There's a song, We're the Only Bible the Sinful World Will Know. There is nothing more impressive that you can do to people than act as a Christian out in the world. When you act that different way, you don't do the things that they do. You don't talk the way that they do. You make a bigger impression on them most times than what they would if they were sitting in here. God is looking for ordinary people who are willing to trust a great God. over and over again, God used ordinary folks. God chose the reluctant Moses. He chose the bashful Saul, the child David, the socially awkward fisherman. He used the shepherd Amos and the teenagers Mary and Joseph. All these people were ordinary people. God specializes in taking ordinary people and using them in extraordinary ways. He can use you, and he will use you if you let him. Take your songbooks out and turn to the page that's been selected. Friends, I want you to realize that the stakes are just as high as they were in the days of Noah. If you're here this evening and you're not a Christian, I want you to remember, think about those people who are outside of the ark when God shut that door on the ark, when he sealed it. And the rain started coming down. And it got to their ankles. They thought, what's this? Never seen this before. Then it got to their knees. They thought, something must be wrong. It gets to their waist. They're outside the ark, beating on the door. Noah, let us in. Let us in. We'll believe you now. We'll believe you. But the door was shut. God sealed it. Think of them as the water got up past their heads. And the last thing they saw in the distance was that solitary ark floating across the water. And the last thing they had to think was, what have I done? Why didn't I listen? There may not be an ark for us, but there is a judgment. And the stakes are just as high. Because when you die, or the Lord returns, it's the equivalent of God sealing that door on the ark. And if you are trapped outside, it's too late for you. Don't wait. If you have any need, be it to come forward, take a seat on the front bench. Show that as your outward sign. Don't wait for what tomorrow that may never come. If you have any need, be it to come forward as together we stand and sing.